Curious Minds asks the questions that might seem crazy, but when you look at the data, some things might not seem so crazy after all. For example, have aliens ever lived on Earth? Do you really want to know the answer? Crazy Curious Minds is not afraid to investigate the issues important to the survival of mankind, like extinction, aliens, world events, and the paranormal. Hosts Tony Tiora and Chad McKinney talk from locations on the opposite sides of the planet in search of the truth. Is the truth hiding in plain sight? Let's find out.
This is Tony Tiora with Crazy Curious Minds. We are now on episode number 4, and I'm looking at this thing, and it says, "Wow, what the fuck is reality, Chad? This is one of your ideas, isn't it?" I mean, like, every time I talk to you about reality, my partner in crime here, my co-host is Chad McKinney out of San Diego. I'm here in Sapporo, Japan. So I know this is one of your episodes, okay, Chad? So I have an idea what reality is. Okay, I'm going to tell you my reality. Can I tell you what mine is, or do you want to tell me what you want to start leading into reality? Because I'm going to tell you what I think reality is.
What do you think reality is? I'm interested in hearing this.
I got it all figured out. I did my research. You told me to do my homework. I did my homework. So this is what reality is. You're walking outside, like in a park in New York, and somebody throws a rock at you, and you look at the rock and you say, "That's going to hit me." But I don't believe it. I'm going to use the power of my mind. I'm going to bend that thing, and it's not going to hit me. And then, bang, it smacks you square in the head. And you're like, "Ouch, shit," and it hurts. And when you realize that that rock hurts, that is reality.
Reality is a rock hitting you in the face. I think that sounds very Orwellian. Wasn't reality supposed to be a military steel boot stomping a human skull or something like that repeatedly?
That's his reality, man. You know, there's a whole bunch of people, like writers, who talk about reality. But I think one of the writers, the guy that did Blade Runner and stuff, Philip K. Dick, said something like, even if you don't believe in something, that which is still there, is like reality. I have to get his quote somewhere. But why don't you tell me what reality is? You're the guy that thinks about this kind of, I'm the engineer, man. You're the psychologist, psychiatrist,
You're not a psychiatrist, but yeah.
Well, you're my psychiatrist. Don't tell people that, but go ahead.
I prescribe high doses of mushrooms, LSD, and ayahuasca, Tony.
Oh, no. Is that what was in my tea, man? Is that what you've been putting in my tea?
Just drink it. You're fine.
Don't drink the tea that the Russians give you at the airports. That's for sure.
I say just wait till you get to the Kool-Aid, man. reality,
Philip K. Dick quote. He said, "Reality is that which, when you stop believing in it, doesn't go away."
That's beautiful, right there.
But you tell
more
me.
Speaking
ahead,
like towards like an objective truth kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me, Chad. I'm lost with reality, so I need to learn what this is.
I think I assigned some reality up. Reality is an illusion, albeit a persistent one. And I feel like there's an objective truth that's going on in this moment, whether that be the rock or whatever else is going on, but there's a subjective interpretation of it. And our subjective interpretation of it is what serves to function as our tuning in to whatever specific reality we're tuning into, whatever frequency that may be. And so there's so many studies discussing that, which I think we'll get into in a little bit here. How does that sound to you so far in terms of Einstein's perception of it as well?
Well, Einstein was as a physicist, right? So, he said some crazy stuff. And it's smart stuff, and I actually agree with it. But he would say stuff like, where math works and it looks like reality, then reality, you know, you don't really know reality. I mean, he had some weird things that, like, because he's a scientist, right? So we say reality is an illusion, but it's a persistent one. And right, so I'm like, as a science fiction writer, I think about this stuff a little bit, but maybe differently than you do. Like, you say, well, what is reality? To me, reality is your perception. It's your senses of the world that you see. Now, but what you see and what you think you see, you know, may not be the truth. So it's like searching for the truth, right? You know, like someone might, you know, the word reality. So like, what's the reality, you know, like of, like if you live, like I live in like, you know, Sapporo, Japan, you know, Japanese have like a whole mindset, like their reality is different than the reality, you know, of an American. But at the end of the day, that's why I use this in Iraq. If a rock's coming at you, there's physical forces at play here. There's physics, you know. The rock has gravity, you know. It has mass. It has certain acceleration. It's decreasing in speed. You know, it's got an elliptical orbit, and it hits you in the head, right? That's just the science of it. And then you get pain. You're like, oh, that hurt. But if you keep drilling down and peeling down the onion skin, what the heck does hurt mean? Well, hurt means that one of my senses of touch, you know, it's like almost like a computer, right? You know, it's got skin, let, you know, something hits the skin. The skin sends electrical signals to your brain, and your brain says, this is what pain is, right?
So if that's, you start digging right there, actually, going though. I have my thought.
But the reason why there's pain is because this body that you have, this, like, you know, this shell or whatever it is, this container of your essence, you know, the more you get hit by rocks, it's going to stop working. Right? I mean, like if you run into a car, this body doesn't work. So from an evolutionary perspective, they want that to be something that you don't want to do. So they create this thing called pain. And so you try to avoid pain and you try to acquire pleasure. That's what, like, a human existence is. That's the reality of us, you know, bipeds walking around on this planet, is you want to avoid pain and you want to acquire pleasure. And it's basically so you don't die and you reproduce, because if you don't reproduce, then those genetics won't get passed on. If you like running into rocks, you're probably not going to have kids. You know what I mean?
Actually, but I think you bring up a very interesting point regarding reality, and I couldn't think of a better lead in for it. So regarding pain and pleasure, and childbirth right there, I feel oftentimes we skew our reality, or rather our reality is skewed for us through a conditioning process that we can get to into in a little bit, to where associations are created to where this event occurs, the rock being thrown or whatever it is, a childbirth, for example, which is kind of where I'm leading into. Uh-huh. And childbirth is deemed to be painful because every movie I've ever seen or cartoon or whatever, the woman is screaming while she's giving birth. And then she is cursing out the dude if he's around and, you know, squeezing his hand like she's crushing a coconut.
Well, if it wasn't painful, now, Chad, right? She'd be like, okay, I'll just leave this thing in my body a little bit longer because it feels great.
Not correct. No. This is where it gets very interesting. So there's this thing. Are you familiar with what was referred to as orgasmic births?
No, you're going to a planet
I can
that
feel,
I'm not.
I can feel.
You're
like,
going
I feel
to a planet that I'm not living on. But that's okay.
You're so disappointed where the conversation is going. It's so great.
Can we cancel this episode? When you start talking about orgasmic births, that's where I'm like confused. Yeah. Go ahead.
And I'm out.
Go ahead. Keep going. So, keep going. I'll drink my tea.
Move over to the Kool-Aid, man. Try that. But so the orgasmic births, women have been conditioned. And so the reason, first off, I'm not a woman. I've never given birth. Much love to every single woman out there.
You with that deep voice accent you had.
I'm a little girly at times, but, you know. At the same time. But I do have friends who have been the result or given birth through orgasmic birth. And so they've relayed this to me as well as what I've already researched into it.
So when you say orgasmic birth, you know, Chad, it sounds like orgasm, right? I don't think, like, when the woman's screaming, she's having an orgasm as she's giving birth, to be honest with you.
And this is where your reality differs, my friend.
Track of reality again. I knew I didn't want to do this show with you. This reality show.
Keep going. So women have, because what they're feeling, they've been conditioned to believe is pain. And they, through midwives coaching them into creating, basically what they're doing is creating a different association for the feeling and sensation that their body is experiencing. So instead of being so conditioned through generations and media and everything else to associate that bodily sensation is pain, they condition themselves to associate that bodily sensation is release and bliss and pleasure. And that eventually leads into a surrender into that experience, which leads into a deep orgasmic state. And so this happens a lot of times when women are giving birth through, there's actually, you can even Google it and YouTube it. There's stuff out there.
I am right now.
Dateline, I believe, did an episode on this as well. I forget the woman's name who had covered it, but at the end of the episode, she was like, man, I just gave birth to my kid and I didn't even know nothing about this. Like she was pissed. Like she
my tenant, right? One of my friends, like, is telling me, it's like when she had like five kids, right?
Yeah.
And she's like in her 80s, and I want to keep her name private, but
yeah, I love her though.
Well, in any case, she said that, you know, they were giving her drugs. She didn't even want to remember she had so many kids, you know, like there was a painful, you know, but it sounds like what you're saying. I mean, some people got this online, man. There's this concept of orgasmic birth, you know, the best kept secret documentary witnessed many beautiful, pleasurable, powerful orgasmic births. Yes. I mean, like, wow. Okay. Well, so we've taken reality to orgasmic birth, but go ahead, continue on this, this line of reasoning, Chad. Go ahead.
So that actually leads into not only conditioning processes, but also placebos and nocebos and placebos by proxy and everything else of that nature, because I would liken reality to one giant placebo effect. When you look at what forms our reality, basically our thoughts, our feelings, our behaviors, and these all contribute to our experiences of the world. Now, you and I might both walk into a room. You know what? KRS-One actually has an excellent example that he discusses that I had semi-quoted in the book, where he discusses, let's say a cashier walks into a room and that cashier looks around and is like, oh, okay, this is cool. I like the furniture, this nice TV, whatever.
Right.
And now let's say two other people walk into that very same room. One is an electrician. Now that electrician and the other is a painter. The electrician is going to have a completely different perspective of that room. They're going to look at outlets, the number of outlets, the availability, the types of lighting, can lighting, dim lighting, but whatever it is.
I want to get back to that orgasmic bird, because now
you can't stay away from it now.
Well, no,
first you don't want nothing to do with it.
I want to go back to that. I'm going to tell you why. I just looked online, and it looked like, you know, being like a you know, an online. I don't use Google. I use Start Page because, you know, it like anonymizes your Google searches.
What's it called?
It's called Start Page, startpage.com. I just don't use Google. I did lots of business with Google. I can't even say how much I did with them when I was working in the tech industry. Lots of business. I probably did the most business out of anybody in the world who didn't like use Google or have a Gmail account. They actually wanted me to get a Gmail account. I'm like, they're like, hey, use your Gmail account. I'm like, I don't have one. They're like, what? I'm like, I don't have one. You know? And they're like, but you manage like this many millions of dollars of our business and you don't have a Gmail account. I can't even, you know, I can't say how much it was. I mean, it's this ridiculous amount of money I did with these guys. And I'm like,
call security.
Yeah, like,
we got to turn in the punch bowl. We got it. Like, you know?
They're like, hey, you got to use our, you know, special. I'm like, no, it's a, you know, my lawyer says that, you know, security wise, you can't use this stuff. You know,
so you want to get back to our game.
But getting back to this, right? You know, there's a doctor. I just looked online. I mean, maybe he's a real doctor, but I mean, it looks like there's a couple sites on this. But what I agree with him, he's saying there's very clear, hard evidence in the last 10 years that, you know, that the number of women who are induced, that is, the labor is kickstarted, is doubling. I've seen it, man. You know, they try to, like, the doctors, they want to do C-sections, they want to give people drugs. I mean, you kickstart labor by giving them a powerful drug, and then you give them more drugs to keep the labor going, and then they drug them up so they don't, women don't even know what's going on in the hospital.
Yeah, and it and says then you drug like the kids after like, they're born,
right? They're like 5-10% women that's in like you know that need it. But these powerful drugs have all kinds of risks, including like brain damage to the baby, a dead baby, a dead woman.
Yes,
I mean like you know what's going on here, and it's like you know I'm wondering like why is it that like whatever happened to like a natural birth where you know. I mean, and saying this guy's saying it now that women are getting all this post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, birth is kind of like death almost. I mean, it's like scary. I mean, like when I was in like the U.S., I mean, we paid money. I mean, we had a really good hospital and everything. It wasn't like, you know, we were out in the middle of, you know, some broken down hospital. I mean, it was one of the top 10 probably in the country we went to. It was 20 at least. And
for sure,
you know, and I'm still like amazed at like, you know, like the whole hospital system. So, you know, that's like the reality now, like for me, like the reality there is like, wow, that's kind of like a scary experience, you know? And most people like the fathers, like they just like, you know, they just trust the doctor. But as you know me, I check everything. Like, I'm like, why are you going to give this drug? Why are you going to do this? Why do we got to do it this way? You know, what's doing this, you know? And then I would do a little bit of research. And before I went, you know, to the, my wife is going to have my son. I did all this research. So like, I'm like the worst customer, you know what I mean? I'm like, oh, you know, you can't do that. And blood pressure is wrong, you know, and,
you know, absolutely. But, which is needed. It's too bad everybody doesn't do something like that.
So my reality is a little different than others, but now, you know, you open my mind up. God, I hate when you do that, Chad. I just, you know, I really do. I just thought I was going to catch you. I was going to catch it. Like this orgasmic birth thing is a bunch of BS. It's gotta be, man. It's one of these hippie things that he's been and hippie. Like, you know, it doesn't even make sense. Nobody used the word hippie, but you know what I mean? Like
I know. I've been called hippie before. I can feel
really?
It. Yeah, once or twice. My favorite thing is calling like people who aren't hippies, hippies though, just because the look on their face afterwards. But yeah, I accept that label. Which actually gets into the power of reality and the use of language. Where in terms of how we think of ourselves, which, you know, thoughts are basically language. It's the words we use to describe ourselves, to describe behaviors, to describe events, and to describe experiences. And those words that we attach oftentimes serve to form the reality as well too. And so like, you know, our words just describe what would be a pleasurable birth for somebody. If you don't have if you've never heard that before, then you likely wouldn't have that experience.
Right.
Or you would have less of a chance given current states of conditioning processes through media and that stuff.
But Chad, you're not giving me the data of like what is reality?
So let me get into reality. The best answer I could give you to reality would be another question. What do you want it to be?
Oh, now you're going to this imagine. Look, I figured it out. I figured out reality. We didn't even need to do the show. I just looked online. I found we could just cancel this one, Chad. So I'm going to end it now. I read it and it's too short to run and no one has to listen to this show. Okay. So here's what the deal is. It says reality. And Wikipedia says reality is the sum or aggregate of all that is real or existent within a system as to that which is only imaginary. The term is also used to refer to the ontological status of things, indicating their existence. In physical terms, reality is the totality of a system, known and unknown. It's the universe. Done. Show's over. Let's go to the next episode.
Done. Now, reality, like when they said imaginary, I think that brings up an interesting point too. Because even our thoughts form a vibration, which creates a ripple in space-time. So like even that serves to form some type of a function and effect upon the rest of this whole cosmic whole right here.
Right.
Now, in terms of going back to the language and the effects of language, there's also effects of language upon – so Dr. Masaru Emoto, are you familiar with him?
He's Japanese, but I don't know him.
Uh-huh.
It sounds Japanese.
Yeah, exactly. He is Japanese, yeah, for sure. He had done these studies for these water studies, and he's done several different water studies to where they've done double-blind placebo studies where they've taken water molecules, they've frozen water molecules, they've attached words on these water molecules. They've done other studies that I can get into in a moment, but we'll focus on the words one for a moment. They've focused on words taped to these water molecules. They've put them back into the freezer. They're frozen. Then they would be shown to a panel of independent judges who would base the water molecules, the beauty of the water molecule, or the aesthetics of the water molecule. And now beauty could turn to be a subjective term. So what they did is they broke down beauty in terms of symmetry, appearance, and there were several other factors based upon that. And then that would all contribute to what would be deemed beautiful or ugly.
And okay, so you're saying, like, if I call the water molecule the goddess, the Venus, right? And the other one's called the dark devil of Denmark or something like that, right? And people say, wow, that's the beautiful water molecule. They're like, well, that one's the evil Darth Vader water molecule. And they could sense that. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, yeah. So, like, in our, so what happened was the water molecules would look like they had, like, you know, harmony, peace, love, light, you know, things of that nature.
Right.
On the water molecule, they were, you know, symmetric, beautiful, very, very aesthetically pleasing to the eye and the feeling of it. Then other ones had hate, anger, rage, violence, etc. on there. The water molecules looked, I mean, and you can go on and Google it and see the results for yourself.
So the other water molecules looked like
mutated.
Look like rats,
exactly. Okay. Now, what's interesting...
Yeah, but what is that have to do with reality?
That, so here's where I'm going with that. Let me go for it. So this is, they've done other studies now where the individual was, there were individuals, and this was across country. So the water molecule, I forget, the water molecules were in one country. Other individuals were in Australia, for example. Let's say Japan and Australia, right? I believe it was more than that. But then these were double and triple blind studies as well, again. Right. And these individuals were informed to send love or light or positive thoughts or negative thoughts to other water molecules in another country, completely another country.
Right.
The scientists didn't know which one was being told. You know, like I said, it was a double and triple blind study.
Right.
The exact same effects had happened. So this individual, these individuals were influencing these water molecules from distances, you know, across oceans. So when I get back to what is reality, that really, when I say, what do you want to be? There's a very profound thing to that. And we can get into that in a moment.
So here's what I think you're going on this. I'm going to use my science fiction, you know, PhD in science fiction writing. Okay. On this, Chad. So look, reality, I think, is like, you know, it's the truth of the universe, in a sense. It is what it is. It's not what you imagine it to be, although you could imagine things. Now, don't get me wrong. What words, the etymology, the definition, like when you say a word or I say a word, it all depends on our background, what we think that word is. So let's get back to, you know, when I use the word imagine, I don't want to use that because maybe people have a different understanding of imaginary. What I think you're talking about is the ability of the mind, okay, to affect matter remotely, kind of like, you know, telekinesis, okay? You know, you look at something and you turn the water into boiling water. I mean, that's like an example. You know, like, it's like Superman, use your eyes, you look at something and you're sending energy waves and, you know, and the water heats up, okay? And it's like molecular changing. You know, you're using your mind, maybe subconsciously or however, you know, you think of what beauty is and what something ugly is. Maybe beauty is something organized, and they're able to get into the molecules of water and organize. It's like telekinesis. Okay. That's like a power, right? I mean, I'm not saying that it's real. Okay. But that would be like a power.
We can get into that too later, but yeah.
Well, yeah. Right. No. And when you talk, you're sending sound waves, you know, normally across the room, but like right now we speak into microphones, we're sending sound waves. They get converted into electrical waves. The electrical waves turn into digital, you know, bits and bytes, which are still the electrical components. And then somebody reassembles the digital, turns it back into an analog, you know? So this is how, like, you know, communication works. So, you know, it looks like magic to people who don't understand it. People who understand, nobody really totally understands, so they don't understand quantum mechanics, and, you know, they know like the formulas of how this shit works, but they really don't know, you know, the study of reality. To me, is like the study of physics. The more you learn about something, the deeper you get. You're like, wow, you know, there's molecules. Wow, there's like atoms. Wow, there's electrons and protons and neutrons. Wow, we found neutrinos. Wow, bosons. You know, you keep getting lower and you're like, you know, and you have to create, and wow, there's more than, you know, there's multiple universes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're talking about is just telekinesis. It's just a power. Now you can change the reality. What you're doing is you're changing the physical world. So you're thinking that, you know, just because you use some telekinesis that you the reality can be whatever you want it to be. I don't think it's within your power to completely like split out into another multiverse or universe and say, bing, wow. I mean, you know, like, don't get me wrong. I think there's probably technology that aliens have or that we could someday develop where we could probably go to multiverses and stuff like that. But just through your brain, unless like you start becoming a cyborg and they put like the multiverse chip in your head where you can split from galaxy to galaxy, I just don't see humans like changing their reality that much. Like you can't just go outside and believe. Like the reason I use that rock is I knew where you were going on this show, Kat. I knew you were trying to set me up. I knew it.
Well, you know what? Let's go back on real quick with interdimensional travel, because that kind of we briefly talked about that in terms of our second episode on cosmic consciousness and in terms of remote viewing and. Remote viewers, as well as like individuals such as Edgar Cayce, the Sleeping Prophet, and people of that nature, reported different interdimensional travel as well. Now, of course, like there's, you know, well, how do you prove it, right? Like, I mean, that's the same.
Where's the data, Chad? This is a data-driven show. Where's the data?
So when you talk about in terms of time and space occur simultaneously, you know, it's the singularity, right? So the past and the future and right now are all occurring right now. And so you're basically, what I'm saying is we're multiverse, we're interdimensional at this very moment, just by our very being. And because
I don't know, I'm not living in 1980. I mean, I kind of enjoyed those years, but I'm not living in 1980 right now. Well, I'm living in 1980.
Yeah. It's 1980 because someone told you it's 1980. We got the Gregorian calendar system, which is one of like 13 operating calendar systems on the planet right now. And, you know, that's just based upon the geology.
Well, the thing is, there's just time. I mean, all there really is what there is right now. Right. I mean, if you think about it, all there really is what there is like right now.
Exactly.
Like, you know, that's all there really is. Now,
I'll give you a definition of reality.
Go ahead.
So I have the definition of reality in my book and I'll read it from my book. Okay.
Please.
So reality is energy that is in a state of constant flux until directed and made tangible by the influence of an observer. So
I like that. It's almost kind of like, you know, like the double slit experiment for electron, you know, whether it's a particle or a wave, you know,
until you interact with it,
you don't, you know, it's a wave until you interact with it. And then it becomes a particle.
Exactly.
You stole that, didn't you?
No, that's actually, that just, you know, that's all God, man, when that stuff comes through. But like,
you're telling me you didn't know about that when you wrote that quote?
I mean, I didn't know about that. I didn't know anybody else saying it, you know?
Okay. But the thing is, look, reality, like, I think I'm making up, like, everybody can have their depth, but I think reality is like, you're in your body, right? And you have senses, you know? And some people have more senses than others, you know? I mean, some people, like, lost their smell and taste from, like, COVID-19. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you might not be able to see, you know, if you watch too much bad television, maybe your eyes went bad and you can't see, you know, you can't hear, you know. So like you can perceive the universe around you with the senses that you have. Right. And that's what you analyze that. But the thing is, whether you believe like that rock is going to hit you or not, that rock's going to hit you. Unless you like, you got some supernatural forces and you can not just molecularize like some water, you can like, you know, molecularize this thing and turn it into like a cotton ball. You know what I'm saying? It just falls down, wind blows it away. So unless you got some like super magical powers, which I'm not saying like people couldn't get someday, but the reality is that rock's going to hit you in the head, whether you believe it's going to hit you in the head or not.
Brings up an interesting point on that. Like, this is where I think we can dive pretty deep into, you know, based upon the definition we just agreed upon regarding reality. Mm-hmm. So there is an objective truth, largely, and we all have the subjective interpretation of it, but that subjective interpretation of it is what forms our reality. Now, what's really fascinating about that, which I'd like to get into, is the effects of the placebo effect and the nocebo effect, which is a little lesser known to a lot of people. Also, the placebo by proxy effect, as well as I would like to get into the power of group intention upon reality. Right. And this is where reality gets really fascinating here. So just we'll kind of build from there and intervene whenever you want. Like, so the first thing is the placebo effect, which I'm sure a lot of people are aware of, but just a brief understanding of it is basically a person, an individual has a positive or negative perception of the outcome of any type of intervention. And that perception is based upon their perception of the medical practitioner or the modality of the intervention and the effectiveness of it, whatever. If the person has a positive perspective on the outcome of a treatment or the modality of a treatment or the proficiency of a practitioner, they are likely to experience a positive outcome to the treatment. So, for example, this is so deep and we can get into this on so many different levels. So someone goes and has cancer, gets diagnosed with cancer. The medical practitioner said they're generally genuinely an optimistic person. Usually they go to the doctor. Doctor's like, yeah, you got cancer, stage 3. But you know what? I see people survive way worse. We're still catching it early enough. And there's these new treatments out there that have been working all the time. And I have a feeling, given your health and where you're at right now, you're going to experience a really positive effect from it.
Now, I believe in that, okay, Chad? I believe that, like, you know, it's like self-fulfilling prophecy. You say you're going to get an A on a really difficult physics exam, so you study really hard, you work hard, and you're like, yeah, I got the A. But if you say, oh, I'm going to get an F, and somebody doesn't study, you know, and then they get the F, and they say, see, I told you, I got the F. Now, I think cancer, like, or whatever you're talking about, I think to a certain level, that's true. Like, if somebody believes, oh, I'll take the treatment, you know, and I believe I'm going to do well, you know, and it helps them to a certain extent. But like, if your leg got blown off, like, you know, like a run over, like at a train or whatever, or some war, your leg got taken off, and the doctor's like, you know, I think you might be able to grow another foot. You know, I mean, I you know, there's some treatments here, and we got some new technology, and they inject you with a placebo. I'm not so sure the foot's going to grow. Do you know
actually,
what I'm saying?
Actually, they found it was funny enough on this. Harvard or Yale was one of the two. I cited in the book as well. Harvard or Yale were discovering that human beings had, to a lesser extent, of course, but they had they were finding that human beings had the potential to regrow. Actually, let me see if I can find them in the book here. That'll take too long to locate, but like
the potential
effects on it. Yes.
Right. I think I read that in your book. That's why I'm bringing this up, because
that's an
one
actual
part
study
of your book that I don't agree with.
So that's why I went so deep for people like you, Tony, on the book. Go and check the references, because that thing is 20 pages deep, and I reference exactly.
I know you had a million references,
and I
got to go do my homework and read your references. But I'll tell you, I'll do it. But now, I'm going to tell you something, Chad. I just don't see somebody growing a foot. I just don't.
Right. Well, let's kind of, for me, I don't limit anything, but I mean, I'd kind of like to continue rolling that train of thought.
Go ahead,
I mean,
please,
like,
please.
Because like, if you have like, let's say for example, things of a cancer or depression, for example, person gives you a pill, a sugar pill, person gives you a thing, a chemical that from the pharmacology, you know, a pharmacology intervention.
Right.
Like, they have found that the placebos are just as effective at treating depression as the pharmacology interventions.
Okay. Something like that makes sense, because that's like a brain disease, right?
It's a chemical thing, but I see what you're saying in terms of physical, but sticking with the physical, for example, right?
Right.
Like, so physical placebo, there've been placebo surgeries And it's been related to Parkinson's, osteoporosis issues related to spinal issues, and a number of other issues out there where they've done placebo surgeries. Now we get into problems is with the ethical use of placebo surgery. But the studies indicate placebo surgeries are just as effective at treating the ones I mentioned. And there's a number of other ones as well in there in terms of like sight and things of that.
So nature. I got a question for you, Chad. How good are you at this placebo stuff? You sound like an expert on this almost. Like you've done a lot of research on this, right?
I've done it. I don't claim myself to be an expert in anything. I'm always a student in many ways in life.
Well, I got a business idea for you. I do. Mm-hmm. I have a business idea for you. So why don't we do this? Why don't you practice your placebo and pray for my hair? Okay. Just pray for my hair. No. Hey, buddy, you're going to be there too someday. You're starting to get a little thin in some sections. Okay. So
I got a hair like that.
Why don't we do this? I got an idea. I just want to, this will prove that maybe in another episode when my hair comes back, I'm going to say I believe in this. So why don't you like pretend like the hair follicles like are the evil molecules right now and they just need to be beautiful again. You know, they just need to start budding shoots and my hair will come out, you know, and make sure it's on the top of my head. I don't want to like turn into like some kind of like orangutan or gorilla.
It's all going on the ears, man.
Oh, man. I wake up and I'm like, oh my God, I got hair all over the place. I don't want it in my nose. Okay. I don't want it on my back. I want it all over the normal part of your head. So if you practice this and my hair comes back, I'll believe in the placebo effect.
You know what? You actually lead to the next thing very well there, which is the nocebo effect. What? Now the nocebo
Where's
effect.
My hair? I don't feel it growing back yet, Chad. Come on.
Exactly.
Well, what's going on here?
So if a person has a negative perception of what's about to happen, or the doctor, which is really interesting, has a negative perception of the outcome of a treatment, you go there, terminal 5 cancer is like, yeah, you might want to get your affairs in order because you're pretty much done. Honestly, I can't even believe you made it into the hospital in this condition. That person oftentimes drops dead really quickly. That's why people going in for a treatment, just a regular medical checkup, you know, and they like, oh yeah, terminal 5, whatever. They die within like 2 weeks. They came in completely healthy just for a regular checkup. Wow. But it's because of the outcome. That's the nocebo effect. So that's why, like, you know, I could believe all I want, but
if I don't believe it.
If you don't believe it, then we got problems. But which is very interesting. And this is going to, now we're going to touch on a couple other things here, which becomes fascinating. Now this is called placebo by proxy. And placebo by proxy is I'll give you an example. There was a study of 54 children who were demonstrating maladaptive behaviors. The parents took the kids for treatment for a psychologist. Psychologists watched behaviors, everything else, and they recorded the maladaptive behaviors. Then they came back though and told the parents, we're going to do this intervention. They say they did an intervention and now they report to the parents. Oh yeah. You know, we did this intervention. They should be getting better really soon. What happened was they didn't do the intervention, but here's where it becomes interesting on two points. One, the parents came back, you know, a few weeks later and they're like, oh, it was amazing. You know, actually you're right. Little Timmy isn't demonstrating those maladaptive behaviors anymore. We can't thank you enough. The intervention was phenomenal. Now that's one thing. It's like, okay, they were led to believe it. You know, all they're doing is just, you know, there's a lot of things where the patient wants to please the practitioner, you know, to look favorable. There's all kinds of things you got to plan for and test for that and prevent for that. But what's fascinating is the children, when examined, were demonstrating a reduction in those maladaptive behaviors.
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. We have a lot of maladaptive behaviors in the United States. And I think that like, you know, like the reality, like people's reality there, like, I mean, like, God, another writer like T.S. Eliot said something like, you know, humankind or whatever cannot bear much reality, right? Like people just don't want to bear the reality, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's tough. I mean, like what the we said earlier, like on the show, like, what is reality? Or, you know, we use the word fuck because, like, you know, it's just like, how the heck does anybody know what reality is anymore in the United States? You know, like,
now C. Wright Mills had said a statement. He was a famous sociologist. His quote was, if a person perceives a situation as real, it is real in its consequence, which also goes down to the whole Confucius. If a man thinketh, so it is type thing. And yeah. Real quick, I do want to touch on, because I know we're running out of time. Please, and I do want to go to the data.
Keep
here.
Going. Let's go past. Yeah. Come on, keep going.
So here's where to take that placebo by proxy effect even further in the creation of group reality. Now, this is where it gets absolutely fascinating. I think it is very relevant to what's going on in our current sociopolitical state right now across the globe with these pandemics and all of that going on right now. So there's a group of meditators, 4,000 meditators that were studied, I want to say in the late 80s, early 90s. Yep, in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
This group of meditators, I forget the exact practice, Vipassana meditation, transcendental meditation. They show up in Washington, D.C., and then they study the crime rates on the area of Washington, D.C., and they assess, like, the violent crimes, rape, murder, and assault, things of that nature. Then they also assess for robberies and things of that nature.
Right, right.
Now, the study, the reason I cite this study, and I think this study is so phenomenal, is because of all the ways that they try to really cover their bases. Now,
what do you mean? Cover the bases with what?
They had a panel of experts from a broad spectrum of government, community, in police organizations involved to serve to provide feedback regarding these statistics, because they could be manipulated just like anything could be manipulated.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so they took into account the effects of weather when they were assessing annual trends. They took into account the effects of people getting older and growing out of the community, increases in neighborhood crime watches, all these other factors that they looked into. At this point, and what they found was, as the number of meditators increased, the reduction in violent crimes in the Washington, D.C. area decreased significantly. The only thing that did not decrease was the crimes of robbery, which may be a reflection of the socioeconomic
status. Right. So here's the thing. I think we might be in agreement on something here, but not for the same reason. Like, let me ask you a question. So I'm trying to understand. I have my theory, but I want to hear your theory. So say all these people are meditating for a better society. Mm-hmm. How is that changing the reality of that society? Can you tell me the science behind it? Like, what's the mechanism? Like, what's going on? Did they just, like, with magic, you know, because, like, is this not like a fantasy book where, like, you know, some gremlin just looks at something and he has, like, he pulls out like a special green powder and he throws it. He says, I've changed the world, Merlin, and you know, and you're like, wow, we're no longer in that fire in the volcano anymore. You know, we're actually in a nice, you know, beautiful Caribbean, you know, beach. I mean, like, that's just not reality. Okay. So tell me, you might, if you believe that, man, we're cutting this show. No, I'm just kidding. But like,
I want to get that green powder, man.
You want that green powder. Yeah, I know you do. So when they meditate, I have my theory. If this is true, right, you get like 50 people, 100 people, 1,000 people, they're meditating in the city and things are getting better. What is the science behind that?
So I think that goes back to a few different things. One, when we break down reality to the wave particle, and when we look at the composition of human beings being about 70% water, give or take, depending on the age of the individual.
Chad, I don't know if you know, but this planet's like 70% water. Are you saying we're like...
That's so strange, isn't it, man? It's so strange.
Keep going.
So they break down the macro to the micro, man, continuously. As above, so below. So that study with Dr. Masaru Emoto, like we spoke about earlier, the influence upon water molecules. So when you're set, everything has a vibration in this existence. there's vibrations and there's frequencies. And when you affect the vibration of something, which also going down to the water molecule stuff, they also did this with music. Those words had vibrations, the thoughts, the individuals had vibrations. And then they've also played classical music versus heavy metal music. And the same exact thing happened. Beautiful for the harmonious music, chaotic, mutated water molecules for the heavy metal music. Now, that's not a diss to metal music, but that is an effect of what the science shows right there. So when a group of individuals comes together and they are meditating on peace in that area.
Now, Chad, I want to interrupt you because we got to have the numbers straight. The body, human body is roughly 60% water. Okay.
It depends on the age.
Well,
it depends on the age
and how much you've been drinking the night before. So I suspect you're correct. You're probably 70% water.
It's 60 to 80%, depending on the age.
Really?
The younger the age, the more they're composed of water. And so then as we get older, because a lot of times we don't practice good health as well as whatever, you know, people just get older and the diet changes.
So you could be, 45, interesting. It's between 45 and 75% is what I read. You could be up to 75% water.
And like I said, I've read up to 80 and depending on where you're reading it. So
it depends on how much you've been like partying the night before, right? You could be bloated with some like a half a keg of beer and then you'd be like 90% water, right?
Actually, man, it depends if you're beer or if you're tequila, you might be dehydrated. Like I've had some nights where, man, I could.
All right. Let's not get off track here. We're supposed to, you know, my campaign manager here told me that I had to make sure we talk more about the data.
Yeah, the data indicated I was near dead.
So keep going on this. So you know, so the thing is about getting back to these people meditating. So you're thinking that like they are meditating and they're because of the waves, like you know, they're changing the reality around them, is what you're saying.
Yes. Now, also, I believe all that exists simultaneously. So it's what we're tuning into. You know, it's a tuning into that as well. Now, same with like, you know, you got the radio. You got a million stations playing right now. And they're all playing at the same time. But
what I don't get is, I'm not trying to be like a jerk here, right? What I don't get is like science. Like 1,000 people meditate to make the city a better place, right?
4,000
people. So what happens? How many people?
4,000 people.
Okay, so 4,000 people, okay? So like there's some kid like me in my younger years with like my friends, you know, a couple of friends were probably hoodlums, you know what I mean? Like, you know, they weren't all bad kids. I mean,
I can look at you.
No. I you know, I was a hard worker at school, but I couldn't help the people that were in my town, you know? So like I go to see one of my friends and there'd be like some troublemakers there. You know, and occasionally I would cause a little trouble too, but, you know, but so say like, you know, they don't like a neighbor and they're going to throw eggs at the neighbor's house because, you know, they don't like somebody, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's like truism, you know, they're throwing eggs and that's happened. Kids do that. They throw eggs during Halloween and they mark cars up with soap. That's what we used to do as kids, you know, take a bar of soap and write something stupid on somebody's window of their car. You know, and so, I mean, that's like the old school, you know, truism, right?
I might do that tonight, man.
Oh, God. There goes my car. But so are you saying that like if 4,000 people in my town sat and meditated, like something's going to go in my head. They're going to go like, well, Tony, don't do that to Eddie's house, even though like he did that to your dad's car the night before. You know, don't go over there and write anything stupid on his car. Don't take that soap bar. And I'm like, okay, you know what? I felt this meditation from 4,000 people. I don't know what it is. I just feel like being good today. I'm not going to have my revenge on this kid, Eddie McDonald, that like screwed up my dad's car so I couldn't go to my soccer game, you know? So,
seek revenge.
Right? So I'm just not going to do it. And now, because of this meditation, so you're saying that there was some waves, something kind of like from Star Wars, like Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, the good force starts emanating like this wave and the cloud of niceness just comes in my head and my friend's head who are going to go out and like soap up cars. And when we're kids, we just become good because of this like nice wave energy that just flew through space. Is that what it is?
I can't say that that's what happened to you specifically, you know, like, because well, you have your free choice.
It didn't work because we soaped up the cars.
But, yeah, you know.
But I'm man, just saying.
We could have some conversations on that. But like,
I'm joking. I think the statute of limitations of soaping up my neighbor's car is over.
You're probably safe.
But, you know, so go ahead.
Related to that, like, you can't, you know, everybody has free will, free choice. But I believe what we're talking about right now is the effects upon outside influences there. And whether it would have the effect on you or not, who knows? You know what I mean?
Right.
But like overall, it for sure does. I mean, that's what the data indicates right there. Everything from the children with a maladaptive study to the 4,000 meditators. Interesting on the meditators one. Now, the effects of the meditation were enhanced exponentially as the number of meditators increased in the area. So when it was 1,000, they were recording it. When it was 3,000, they recorded it. And then when it peaked out past 4, they recorded it. And they found that as it increased, as the number of meditators increased.
So what I'm wondering is this. Here's the other thing. Like, you know, garbage in, garbage out, right? Like, you can make, like, assumptions, like a scientific assumptions. You can say, hey, there's a city with 100,000 people, and we got, like, 1,000 meditators, you know, and then, you know, or, like, you know, like, so say it's 100,000. You get 1,000 meditators, things start getting better, 2,000, 4,000. But, like, maybe it's not like that they've changed the reality. Maybe because they went and meditated, and they all went home, and they believed it, like, it's like the placebo effect. They believed that things are going to get better, so they treat the kids nicer. Nothing, had nothing to do with that.
No. So that's an excellent point, though. That's an excellent point right there. So this is what becomes so freaking fascinating about this. The group of individuals that were the meditator, the transcendental meditational individuals, they were coming from outside the D.C. area.
They weren't
local residents.
Oh, jeez. All right. So now, all right. So then, okay. Back to the blackboard here. Back to the blackboard. actually, we don't even use blackboards. We use whiteboards now. I've never used the blackboard in like 20 years, 30 years. But like, you know, back to the boards. So now maybe then the only thing that I can think of, like scientifically, because I don't like this hocus pocus, you know, green magic dust stuff, you know, coming out of the, you know, unicorn's butts, if you know what I mean. I think that maybe what they're doing is that they're using like they're connecting into the cosmic consciousness, right? It's not sorcery, right?
Sorcery,
they're connecting into the cosmic consciousness, and they're like using telepathy, remote viewing, or whatever, you know, some powers of the mind. And they're changing like that local energy field in the area where, like, you know, when people go to sleep and they have dreams. So maybe, you know, because like I believe in deja vu. I believe in, like, you know, telepathy and stuff like that. I think that the more you practice that, the better you're gonna get at it. People just don't believe it, but it's out there. So I think that what's happening is when people are sleeping, you know, they're picking up this energy of these 4,000 people. You know, saying, you know, you should treat your kid nice. You shouldn't soap your neighbor's car up, even if they, you know,
even if they deserve it.
Right. And you know, you should just do something else. And you're like, you wake up and you're like, you know, I don't know why, you know,
hit him with a rack.
Let's live and let live, you know, hey, let's listen to some Beatles, you know,
make all the world you need one again
or something like that. All we need is love. You know? And that's the only scientific thing that I could think of. You know,
I think you're hitting the nail on the head, Tony. So I think it goes, I think when we break it down, just like we broke down reality to the particle wave, the wave particle, I think that energy that you speak of, that energy is a vibration. And that vibration is influencing all the other energy around it. It's the ripple effects. It's the waves in the ocean. It's still the ocean, but these waves are going out and they're having an impact upon the rest of what's near it. And I feel you're hitting the nail right on the head there. which I feel is so fascinating. I think we're almost out of time. Actually, I think we went over, to be honest with
you. Well, we don't have a deadline here. Like, some shows could be 30 minutes, some could be 40. I mean, as long as you got time, you know, I've got time. So, you know, you probably want to go back to bed. To me, it's like a little past noon for me. So, interesting on the whole thing. I always think about like, what's the consequences of like, you know, the way we look at reality. And, you know, I think like people's reality is based upon their education in a way. And they allow systems to skew, you know, like the truth. To me, reality is like your physical universe and the truth, and you can change your physical universe. And what you're talking about is changing it through doing good things, like having meditation for good things and don't do evil things. And I think you can change your reality. I think what you're talking about is like this paranormal aspect of what reality can change. But like, I don't want the show to be in politics, you know, per se, but like, I was just looking through quotes, right? And I saw one quote that was kind of interesting. It said, "You're not supposed to be so blind with patriotism that you can't face reality." Wrong is wrong.
100%. 100%.
No matter who says it. Right? You know what I'm saying?
100%.
I mean, I don't care if it's patriotism. I don't care if it's like some corporate doctor trying to sell you some BS medicine that, you know, they're telling you is good, it's not good. Wrong, you know, in this country and in the world, I mean, people's reality is skewed. It's skewed by the media. It's skewed by, you know, the war of the two political parties. It's a war it's war on the poor, right? You know, people can't, it's a war on the education. It's a war on the IQ. It's a war on people's health. It's a war on the planet. I mean, the truth, the reality for me, like the world is in like some big trouble. I mean, some really big fucking trouble, right? And people are just running around with like, you know, smoking unicorn dust, that green dust we were talking about earlier. And they think that the world is just going to be fine. The world's in the wrong place, man. And, you know, so go ahead. Maybe I'm being too negative. Maybe, you know, I need you to get 4,000 people out there or 10,000 people thinking like how we're going to make the world a better place. Because that's what I worry about reality. I think the reality is actually really bad right now, like really, really bad for the world.
I feel like you bring up a really good point, and like that stuff does exist, like poverty, war, famine, all these things exist. I also feel though like we have the power to shift that, you know, ourselves at this very moment as we continue to go and raise our vibration. And, you know, take care of ourselves, take care of our health, you know, try to find the hate, the ignorance, the greed, the racism, the prejudice, the violence within ourselves and connect back to our peace. And as we have our peace, we'll carry that vibration within us and that's going to spill out into the rest of the world. And then our reality will be morphed by that. And then that inadvertently, though positively, has an impact upon those around us that we engage with as well. And then it's exponential wildfire. Now, in terms of all of these things happening in the formation of the reality, if you look at the monetary system, if you look at the alleged pandemic going on, all these things, are things that we have bought into. Like, right. I really, truly, in my heart of hearts question, if there was no such thing as media, if there was no such thing as mainstream media, you know, air quotations or social media, things of that nature, how real is this pandemic at this moment versus just like, oh yeah, John got the flu?
Well, you know, I didn't say that. I didn't get to say it in the other episode, but like the reality is very different in Japan for the pandemic. Like I'm going to tell you what's going on right now. You know, like today is August 26, 2020. So this gives people like a timestamp if somebody listens to this in posterity. Like I said, I don't think we're going to get any fans, but you know, maybe our grandkids will listen to this someday and laugh at these two morons. But yeah, I know you're not going to win. You know, hopefully you don't have kids.
Bite your tongue, Tony.
My kid's trying to kill me already. He's only like six and he's like, "Daddy, it's why do you say that stuff? He says like, he has like masking tape. He just puts it on my mouth when I want to talk sometimes. He's like, you know, so,
but, you know, I just as a heads up on that, I got to take responsibility for that part though. I've been slipping the kid like 10 bucks every time he does it.
No,
so like, you can't really blame him. Yeah. You can't really blame him.
Why do you think I moved out of San Diego? I can't even let him play soccer with you anymore. So, you know, getting back to Japan reality, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you how it is here. Like, and I'm not saying, look, I don't want to get into the politics of the coronavirus, but I'm going to tell you, Japan's opened up, right? Like my son goes to school, you know, and he's been going to school for like weeks. I can go to a restaurant. I can go to a gym. I mean, a lot of people don't get this. Like Japan, I think, is like a sleeper and they're scared to let people know, like we were saying in the other episode, that they don't do the MMR. They don't want like the pharmaceutical companies coming. You got to do the MMR because, you know, you're going to make us look stupid that you're the only, you know, industrialized country that doesn't do the three shots all in one.
Now, are they mandating masks over there?
Well, the thing is, they use the masks. They do.
Are they mandating it though, or are they just?
No, that's the funny thing. Here's like in the United States, they mandate it. Nobody wants to use them. Here, they're like they're not mandated, but people wear everywhere. They wear them everywhere, and they got like, you know, alcohol solutions. They try to do social. Like, not that all this stuff is going to work, because like unless you got like an N95 mask, you're really not going to block. You know, but like if you're coughing and you're sick, it makes logical sense. Like if I got like a virus and I cough in a mask, less of it's going to get out in the air, you know, as particles for other people to breathe, right? So you really wear the mask to protect the other people, not yourself, because the regular masks aren't like these N95 masks. And who wants to be walking around with those N95 masks? And you can't breathe those things. I was wearing them for a while, and I almost passed out in the airplane wearing one of those stupid things.
Yeah,
you know, but the thing is, you know, so, but the thing I'm trying to say is that like the reality here is like, you know, 30 million people in Tokyo and it's open. You know, and they got like 150 or 175 people got sick the other day out of 30 million. Now, maybe they're probably not doing the testing the United States is doing, but they're wearing masks. They're all going to work. They can go to bars. There's social distancing. They, you know, when you go shopping, you know, restaurants try to like, you know, keep you like away from everybody. You go to Starbucks, you got to go sit in between people, but they keep the windows open. And it ain't perfect, but like, you know, like we're living here, you know, like my kid, like not putting kids in school. I think that's horrible, man. Cause the kids, like I said earlier in the other show, they're probably going to get, they have a chance of getting sick, but it's not like adults. They're not like the 80s where like, you know, kids get sick all the time. I mean, anybody who's got kids and they send a kid to school, it's like a biological factory of infectious disease. You know what I mean? Like they catch colds all the time, and, you know, they give them to you. So, you know, but like, don't get me wrong. This COVID-19 is some serious stuff for the old folks. It'll take them out. And it's taken out a lot of people, and it'll take out younger people. But all you know, viruses will do that. I think the people are just scared. The government's all scared because they probably secretly know that it came out of a lab, and they didn't know how bad it was going to be. And it's pretty bad. But we live in Japan. The reality here is, I can walk around. I can go. I go on a train. I can go to a swimming pool. I went to a movie theater with my son last week. You know, we live in the United States. I mean, like anybody I talk to, it's like Crazyville. It's like, what's wrong with the U.S.? I'm starting to wonder, like, you know, maybe it was something in like the previous flu shots that they got that made their bodies like weak for the coronavirus or something. I mean, I just can't understand the science. I don't know why the United States is so screwed up. But, you know,
I think it's because there's an election coming. There's also different states are experiencing and reporting different things as well, and they're engaging with it in different manners. I have actually, and I kind of wrap the show up in it pretty soon here as well. I think we're almost in an hour, but they there's other statistics out there that have I've read where more people are actually dying from the flu than COVID. And
well, you know, Japan, nobody's sick. Like the pediatrician where my son goes, like they're going out of business. There's nobody in the, because everybody's so healthy right now, there's no colds. There's absolutely nothing. Like nobody catches anything. You know, people were afraid to go to a doctor, but like, you know, like the pediatricians, they have like no work, you know, in Japan, which I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, I'm happy that there's no work. I mean, I don't want people catching colds and flus. But the reality
helps a little bit, actually, sometimes, you know, like that strengthens the immune system too. Like we talked about in the last episode, you know, that makes you stronger too. You know, sometimes
well,
you break
the more,
the bone.
You know, yeah. Like the more flus you get when you're young and healthy, hopefully helps you when you get old. So your T cells and your antibodies are all jacked up. So when something comes in, it doesn't take you out. So if you're going to get sick, you want to get sick when you're young, you know, and have the antibodies. So when you get older, I mean, it, like the kids that had measles and all these other things, you know, when they're younger, there's no, you know, there's no better immunity to like measles than probably having measles. I think you have to take like multiple shots. They're saying in Japan to protect yourself from measles. So it's like, you know, you got to keep taking these shots, but, you know, I mean, like you got to look at the pluses and minuses of everything. Everybody's reality, you know, is based upon, I mean, the truth is reality, but you got to decide, like, do you want to face reality? Right. You know what I mean? And I think it's important to face reality and learn, like what you said, like, I didn't know that you could like use like meditation. I think that the nice thing, Chad, and I know we got to end soon, is that if you try to believe in a good world and try to create a good world and meditate towards a good world, and believe that you can help people and try to help people and be sincere and all this, we're just going to make the world a much better place. And that's the reality I want to live in. And that's how I want to end the show. I mean, you got your, you know, and if there's anything else that you want to add before we end, that's how I want to end.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you, Tony. Just again, like always, thank the listeners. And also if we own our own vibration and we function from peace and we function from gratitude, then the more that we will attract in our life, in our reality, and the more that will have a positive influence upon the world around us. And with that, we are very grateful for everybody tuning in, and we wish you lots of peace, lots of love on your journey, and looking forward to speaking with you next week when we have our next episode.
Awesome. Thank Chad. Thanks for doing this podcast with me. Have a great day.
All right. You too.
Bye.
Bye.